It's the Elephant in the Dome, the official podcast of the Washington State Senate Republican Caucus. I'm Trace Hillis, along with Senate Republican leader John Braun. Bill Gates has a change of heart on climate change, and it's gotten really expensive to eat out here in Washington. Bill Gates made some waves recently with a memo he sent out about climate change. It's really interesting because it seems like maybe he's pivoting a little bit from his original stance on the climate. Talk a little bit about this memo, what it said, and why you think it's significant.
Well, high level, what it said is, you know, he's finally and thankfully come to the conclusion that they've been off base on concerns about climate change. And that's not to say that there isn't genuine concerns about climate change. It's that we don't have this immediate existential threat of climate change. The data simply doesn't say that. And I, on the one hand, I admire his willingness to look at the data, to follow the science and change his position accordingly. I also think it's a little late, and because of his position and those of many others that have rushed us along this path, we have a state that's one of the most unaffordable to live in the country, as we deal with things like the Climate Commitment Act, which adds, you know, 50 to 60 cents per gallon in fuel. It adds energy costs to our schools, to our businesses, to our homes. It goes on and on because this, you know, this fabricated crisis was used to pass very harmful legislation instead of taking a more balanced and data-driven approach. So good that we're, you know, folks are being reflective and changing their position. I wish they would have done that a little earlier.
I mean, his memo is, you know, there's a lot of stuff in it, but I think one of the things that kind of hit me, it seems like he wants more of a focus to be on actually helping people. Yeah. Is that kind of what he's saying?
Yeah, and it's 100%. Yeah, again, high level. It's 100% in alignment with where Republicans have been in Washington State for a number of years. That affordability is a real issue. That we are hurting people who can least afford it with these very much luxury beliefs of folks like Bill Gates and others who can afford the additional cost, but normal, you know, average Washingtonians simply can't. It's really hurting their pocketbooks that are and causing long-term damage. Some are even moving out of the state as a result. They just can't make it here, so they're going somewhere else. Others are running up credit card debt. Others are living in kind of a self-produced, you know, poverty because of these policies put in place. So, yeah, it's good to see him finally realizing that this is not just, you know, good idea, therefore we should do it, that there are real costs to it. And those real costs are often borne by day-to-day Washington, you know, average Washingtonians trying to make their way in our state.
People will say, and he was criticized by a lot of people for this memo, and people who before maybe were in lockstep with him aren't so much anymore. And people will say about you, well, yeah, he's a Republican. He doesn't care about the climate. He doesn't care about the environment. So, yeah, he's going to say we shouldn't spend anything on these issues. You know, what do you say to people like that?
It's nonsense. The idea that somehow Republicans don't care about the environment, there's no basis for that. What Republicans have consistently cared about is doing it based on the science. And the science has been clear for a while. And I think that, you know, some Republicans have come, a little bit, I guess, to the middle and saying, hey, we may have a long term climate, you know, issues, but they are long term and we can adjust to it. We can make changes, but we got to do it in a way that's sustainable. You've heard me say this over and over again. As we make changes to deal with our climate concerns, the only way we make them last is if we do it in ways that people can afford, that don't, you know, run people out of our state or force people into, you know, working around the rules instead of following them. They got to be incremental. They got to be effective. They got to be supported by the science, and they got to get real results. And that's another thing I would say, use the Climate Commitment Act as an example And the voters, disapproved an initiative last year that would have removed it. So it's going to stay there for a while, but it's not really doing what is advertised. It's not really reducing any measurable amount of carbon. It's collecting like $1.5 billion per year from folks who are mostly from transportation, and it's being used for special interests by the Democratic majority. You know, the other thing I would say is one of the changes in priorities you've seen from Democrats just in the last 6 months, let's say, is their focus on affordability. They finally recognize that this is a big issue to people around the state, and yet they're kind of steering it around the very things they did to cause this affordability crisis in our state, whether it's climate issues or we've talked before about tax issues, regulatory issues. These are all policies put in place by the Democratic majority and Democratic governor that is making Washington, frankly, unaffordable.
The Climate Commitment Act, as you said, was upheld by initiative. Are there ways to, if you can't repeal it, are there ways to make it better and work for people and maybe help with the affordability issue a little bit more?
Well, I think that there's a stepwise approach to this, and we're not in a position to just undo it, which I think would be the smartest thing. There are better ways. I've said this for a long time. There are much better ways to reduce carbon. And for the most part, the most effective way is to let, the 8 million people in our state make individual decisions, and they will, just like we have see people, choosing non-GMO food or organic food in the retail marketplace because that aligns with their values. If we gave them carbon choices in a retail space, I think they'd make choices that would bring down carbon over time, and it would be in a way that they could afford to do. So, there are things we can do. But I think right now it's not likely that we undo the Climate Commitment Act. So what we do is need to make it work. And the very first thing we need to do to make it work is increase transparency. The general public needs to see how all this money being raised from them is being spent. And I think when they see it, they're going to be wildly disappointed. We've pressed state government, Office of Financial Management in particular, Department of Ecology in particular, to provide actual data on what is this money being spent for? What is it reducing carbon? What you find is much of the stuff, they don't even have a pretense of reducing carbon. And when you reduce carbon, what's the cost of reducing that carbon? And what we've seen so far is the cost per ton, which is normally how this is measured, is many times the value of other ways to reduce carbon. Meaning we could take a third of the money, buy carbon reduction on the market, and have a much bigger impact at a lower cost to people around the state.
Democrats who write the budget are going to be looking for money in this upcoming session because predictions are that there will be a deficit if they don't find some more money. Can they take some of the money? I mean, you mentioned before how much money is sitting in that Climate Commitment Act account. Since we have it, can it be used for some priorities for government so taxes maybe don't have to go up more?
Absolutely. And I'll throw out a couple examples, but there are dozens, probably hundreds of ways we could use some of this money. I mean, my first choice, of course, is to return it to people in the form of a tax rebate. If you ask Republicans how they would manage it, well, the first would be repeal it. If you can't repeal it, refund it in other forms to the taxpayers. That's number one. And an easy way to do that, one that has been done before that Republicans proposed this year in the session earlier this year, and it's completely in keeping with the actual language of the bill, is to use it to fund the Working Families Tax Credit. This is a program that was put in place by Democrats, almost two decades ago now. It was never funded until a few years ago when Republicans said, hey, this is something, if we're going to have it on the books, we ought to fund it, and it has finally been funded, and originally was partially funded with Climate Commitment Act money. We proposed that same thing this year to try to reduce the amount of taxes the Democrats were paying, and they was like, oh, you can't possibly do that, in spite of the fact that in the statute that went into place as a result of the Climate Commitment Act, it says these are the things you can use this money for, and at the very top of that list is working families tax credit. So this is a way, I think, a simple way, an effective way to return money to the taxpayers. And if you do that, you know, some of it could be new money, and you could potentially increase the credit for some folks. That might make sense, or supplant other operating cash money that's funding the program, and that can then be used for the good of the order. Either way, that is a simple, effective way to use this in a way that mitigates some of the impact to taxpayers. Other things that have been suggested, and I supported, this is essentially in large part a gas tax, using more of it for transportation and help solve, you know, that wouldn't solve our operating budget problem, but it could help solve our transportation budget problem, which is easily as difficult as the operating budget problem. We absolutely could do that. Something that has historically been in the transportation budget, although I think eventually some of it will move to the capital budget, is this issue of addressing culverts that are blocking fish passage around the state. And we've already spent billions of dollars to fix this issue, but there are still billions of dollars more to be spent to fully address the issue. It seems to me, if this money is being collected to help with climate issues, fish passage certainly is an important climate issue, and why, you know, we all might disagree on how we got to where we got, I don't think there's much disagreement across the aisle that this is a problem we ought to be fixed, and that we are all committed to improving salmon runs in the state of Washington. So you could use that money for fish passages, and either, you know, to get the project done earlier or to supplant other money that could be used for other transportation or related projects. So there's a couple examples, but as I say, there are probably 100 different ways to do this to reduce the need for more taxes and more money out of the people of the state of Washington's pockets.
Well, those things seem in line with Democrat priorities, like helping people in need. It was the first thing you talked about. The second thing was transportation, but certainly, you know, transportation includes transit, you know, I mean, you put money there and maybe, and then the other thing you mentioned was, you know, salmon restoration. These are all things that Democrats say they care deeply about.
Absolutely. But you could go back and listen to the speeches on the floor of the Senate where we proposed to use this for the working families tax credit. And you'd think that we were proposing, you know, medieval policy or something. I mean, it was outrage that we would consider doing that, in spite of the fact that in their very own bill that nearly every one of them voted for, it says this is not only a option, but the top option, in spite of the fact that we've done nearly the same thing in previous years under Democratic votes. They were, you know, hair on fire, this can't be done, and instead of calming down and saying, all right, how do we help regular people? So if, you know, I said earlier, they've kind of changed their message and they're addressing affordability. If they really mean it, and we'll see, if they really mean it, this is a simple way. It's where the rubber meets the road, and they can do something that actually helps people day to day who really need it.
You're talking about regular everyday people, and those people like to eat out sometimes. I think we all know, you know, if you cut back on eating out, it you know, helps the bottom line for the family. But, you know, we like to do it from time to time. It is becoming so. Our state, a new study shows that our state is maybe the most expensive state in the union when it comes to dining out. What do you make of that? And is that something that you're concerned about? I mean, the restaurant industry supports a lot of people, obviously, small business owners, people who work in the restaurants. I mean, at some point, if it becomes too expensive, people will just stop going out, right?
I think they already are, frankly. I mean, hospitality is a very important sector in our economy, and they're struggling. You know, we just had a big, you know, distillery operation, has several retail spots around our state, announced that they're closing all their retail spots. The study you mentioned that says we're the most expensive in the country for restaurants to eat out. These are all wearing on people. They're just making different choices. They can't afford to continue to do it. And it's a huge impact to people who rely on this sector for their livelihood, to feed their families and support their lives. So this is a big deal. And it is sadly consistent with other news we get on other affordability issues, whether it's childcare or housing, healthcare, food, gas. Washington is either at the top or near the top in all these areas that affect the cost of living. I mean, I think, depending on which study you look, we're number three or four overall on the cost of living, highest cost of living in our country. And if you're really going to do something about that, you have to look at the tax policy. We went over the last 8 years where Democrats have had full control of both chambers of the legislature and the governor's mansion. We've gone from, sort of middle of the road, maybe even top half of reasonable tax liability to we're now in the bottom third and getting worse, it seems like, every year. This has become a very high tax, very high cost state. And frankly, people's earnings are not growing as quickly. And we have seen this, and you've heard me and others say it over and over. The state's budget has grown over the last 8 years at twice the rate of median income. And our median income has grown. It's grown among the best in the country, but the Democratic majorities just keep spending more and more money. And we're rolling into a session here in a couple months where they are going to be faced with a deficit yet again of their own doing. It's not because we're in recession. It's not because revenue isn't growing. It's just not growing as fast as they want to spend. They just can't seem to stop the spending. And you don't stop the problem unless you slow down the spending. And it's hard work. It's hard decisions. I get that. But if we don't do it, we're just going to continue to spiral down, spiral further and further down.
I know a lot of restaurant owners support Democrats. But you're out there talking to restaurant owners. What are they saying needs to happen to address this? Really, it's becoming a bit of we overuse the word crisis, but it's becoming almost a dining out crisis. I mean, it's the most expensive place in the nation, and again, it's a very important industry. So what can the legislature do? And you mentioned reducing taxes always, but are there other things that can be done to help these restaurants out?
There's a ton of things that can be done to help the restaurants out and help other small businesses out as well. I mean, restaurants are kind of in the news right now because of the recent study, but that same impact, those same forces are affecting small businesses across our state. And, yes, of course, reduced taxes would be one thing, or at least not increased taxes would be, so I would start by saying, just do less. The legislature stopped coming into session every year and the Democratic majority making it worse every single year. And whether it's taxes, whether it's, business regulations, whether it's additional labor law that ultimately costs money, all these things pile up and make it harder and harder for these businesses to make ends meet. And they're just going to slowly shut down. And we're seeing it. I mean, this is We've been pretty blessed in Washington over the last 10 years, particularly during the pandemic. We've had a very robust, very resilient economy. But eventually, you can't just keep, tapping it for more and more money and think there's not going to be an impact. We've basically, taking more of the goose that lays the golden egg. And we see the results very real time in revenue collected, in the forecast from the state's economists, that these taxes, regulations, labor law are all causing our organizations, big and small, around our country, around our state rather, to struggle. And some of them aren't making it as a result.
You mentioned labor. That's obviously the biggest cost for restaurants. Is there anything the legislature can do to help with those costs? They're really, especially in some cities, I mean, with minimum wage increases, they've really gotten pretty high. Can you offset the tips? Are there things you can do to help in that area?
I think the easiest thing you do in restaurants is to provide a tip exemption for minimum wage. I mean, a study I recently saw compared earnings for folks working in restaurants in Idaho compared to Washington, where, you know, the Idaho minimum wage is much, much lower than the Washington minimum wage. And yet the waiters and waitresses in Idaho were making more money per hour because they were able to do much better at tips. You know, there it was really not surprising, I wouldn't say, but I think, you know, certainly highlights the issue that, you know, if you are, you know, good in this industry, you make most of your money from tips. And if you can bring down the cost of eating out because the minimum wage is lower, patrons are going to be more likely to tip more aggressively. It's not hard to figure out. And it's something you might come to kind of, it's a common sense conclusion, but it was interesting to me to see an actual study and actual results that supported that exact conclusion. So very simple thing, something we've talked about in Washington for many, many years, is to provide a tip exemption for minimum wage. I think there's solid evidence that the folks would actually do better as a result. It's very similar. It's a completely different industry, but we've had, you know, in the last few years, this overtime discussion for ag. And I can't count how many times, you know, actual workers have come to Olympia to testify in front of the Labor and Commerce Committee and say, hey, I would rather not have overtime, because when I don't have overtime, the farm workers, they know how to maximize their efforts during the season to maximize their earnings. They're smart people. They know how the industry works. They know that it's hurting the industry and it's hurting them directly in terms of their income. And yet the folks, you know, in charge, the Democrats, they're straight on ideological lines. They don't want to countenance the idea that they may not fully understand the economy, which they without question do not understand the economy. Not very few of them have had to live in a business environment where they feed their family as a result of good business good business decisions. Therefore, they just aren't exposed. They don't understand the harm they're doing to these industries.
You mentioned agricultural workers. That kind of gets us back to the restaurant conversation as well. Another obviously big price for restaurants is food. And any of us who have gone to the grocery store know that food costs have gone up. It's the same for restaurants as well. Are there ways to address that?
There are lots of ways. I mean, there's a whole bunch of factors that go into the cost of food. The top issue, though, really is transportation. I mean, you know, literally everything we use these days has to be moved somehow. And that transportation cost in Washington has gone up significantly because of the cost of fuel. Cost of energy has driven those costs higher and higher. And we see it directly, whether it's us buying food in the grocery store or a restaurant buying food to serve to patrons. It's driving the cost of food up. And again, lots of different things we could do. But if I was going to do one thing today, I would address the cost of transportation to try to bring the overall cost down in restaurants and in other small businesses and therefore in households across our state.
Well, these issues will be top of mind come the legislative session. Do you have any hope that the Democrats might take on some of these ideas from Republicans? They're dealing with a budget situation. They know people are worried about affordability. They seem to be, at least they say they're worried about affordability themselves. You know, I mean, is there room there for bipartisan discussions and maybe some healthy change in the future?
Oh, I'm optimistic. I think there's always room for work on this. And you've seen we've done this in other areas. You know, we worked really hard on public safety. We continue to work hard on public safety, but it took us a couple years. But the Democrats acknowledged the fact that that they got it wrong when it came to pursuit, that they got it wrong with the path to legalizing hard drugs, and ultimately some of them were willing to to go back and undo their bad policy. Same thing on affordability. Finally, after several years of talking about it, now they are also talking about affordability. And the ones who are intellectually honest will have to to acknowledge that it's their own policies that have put Washington in the position it is. And therefore, if they acknowledge that and they're willing to have good faith conversations, I think there is a path to bipartisan work to improve affordability in Washington. But we're going to have to, you know, Republicans' role in this has been and will continue to be to highlight the issues that the people of the state of Washington are talking about it. Affordability is not, without question, the number one issue. And you're going to hear us say, look, majority Democrats, the people of Washington can't afford this policy you're proposing. Here's what you can do to make Washington more affordable. And they're going to be put in a position where they're either going to have to talk about affordability without any substance, or they're going to have to acknowledge the fact that they got it wrong and they're going to have to correct their ways.
That's it. Republican leader John Braun, I'm Trace Yillis. This is The Elephant in the Dough, the official podcast of the Washington State Senate Republican Caucus.